Swinging spells down the street, same old decks we played last week. It's MTG in quarantine. We're all right. We're all right. MTG in quarantine podcast. Hey yo, what is up everybody? My name is MJ and you are listening to the one and only MTG in Quarantine podcast, where the motto is EDH, community, now and always. As usual, before we get started here, I'd like to give a quick shout out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. So huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Ro for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And you can pick up your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming. That is inkedgaming.com. Got two really awesome versions there, both the full color logo as well as the grayscale version. They both look amazing. You're going to want one for you and all of your friends. So again, you can go over to Inked Gaming. That's inkedgaming.com. You can use the affiliate code in the link tree linked below and you will help support the channel, and that is greatly appreciated. And on to the episode. So, if you are or are not aware, I don't know, this is technically the third anniversary of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. Honestly, I really can't believe I've been doing this for 3 years. A lot of stuff has changed since I started this podcast. I was just kind of talking about positive stuff in a very, I feel, very different community that we had, or than we have right now. And anyway, yeah, this is not going to necessarily be an episode like a lot of the other ones that I do. Obviously, I love talking about positive things, talking about trying to lift up amazing deck ideas, do different things, talk to amazing people, and this is kind of not the same thing. So today's episode is going to be talking about the deck concepts I've built that just haven't quite made it, you know? For one reason or another, I just either don't enjoy playing them, the deck concept fell flat, or just some other thing that has caused me to basically throw this deck in the trash bin. And for starters, I really don't like throwing decks away. Obviously, if I put a lot of time and effort, especially if I purchase cards into these decks, I really don't like throwing them out per se, or, you know, just de-sleeving those, putting them back in my bulk bin and walking away. But there are a few decks here that have just fallen out of favor, I would say, that for one reason or another just never ended up sparking the joy or just never worked out as I intended for them to. So I'll just talk about a couple of those decks here today on this episode and just kind of what the process was behind trying to build those decks, some of the stuff that happened when I was playing the decks, and then ultimately why I just kind of got rid of the deck. So without further ado, I'm going to start in the part of the color pie that apparently I can never find anything to stick in, and that is Rakdos. So obviously the red and black color pairing, a lot of aristocrat stuff, a lot of sacrifice stuff, red and black doing their best things, and I don't know why I struggle with this color pairing, but anyway, this first deck right here kind of comes from the era where I was trying to build a lot of very popular commanders in a way that was very different than what EDH Rex suggests. Obviously, if you've been listening to my podcast before, you've heard this a million times, but I do like trying to build decks that are very different from the status quo. So I typically take an EDH Rec recommendation, throw that out the window, and go and do my own thing. Unfortunately, that doesn't always mean that I end up with a product I actually really enjoy. So this first deck is Anya Falconwrath, who is an extremely popular commander, very CDH viable, or at least maybe used to be, I'm not sure, still now. But anyway, the point is, Anya is a 1-3 vampire from C19. She costs 1 black and a red, has haste, a tap ability to discard a card, and so you can draw a card. And whenever you discard a card, if it has madness, untap Anya Falconwrath. So the way most people build this particular deck is they just throw as many Madness cards into the deck as possible. Obviously, we've seen Madness in multiple sets. Most recently, at least in the popular vernacular, in the Shadows over Innistrad and Eldritch Moon Shadows block. So you had a bunch of cards from that set that had Madness, a lot of them just being kind of common creatures, you know, very overcosted creatures for what they have, but they had Madness, so you could play, you could discard them to some of the other mechanics in that limited block and play them for a reduced cost. So the way I've seen this deck mostly made is people just jam as many Madness cards as they have into the deck kind of willy-nilly. They really have no intention of casting those cards for the most part. And that was kind of the issue I had with that typical way people build the deck is I feel like in this particular deck, you really, unless you're going for the combo finish of the World Gorge or Dragon and Anime Dead or Necromancy combo, very convoluted combo, by the way. If you don't understand how that works, definitely check that out over on, I think, Commander Spellbook, or maybe EDH Rec now has that on there, I'm not sure. But anyway, what I didn't like about that concept was you end up with a ton of basically useless cards in your deck where you are 100% tied to your commander. Obviously, if Anya gets removed, you're screwed because basically your entire deck is filled with 30 to 40 cards that have basically no utility in most situations. And unless you have a bunch of other discard effects in your deck, are you really not going to be able to get much value out of it? So I felt that, you know, this is a very glass cannon type deck, and that's not what I was looking for. So the original idea here was I thought, okay, if I can use Anya's ability to tap and discard a card, draw a card, maybe I can use this in a reanimator shell. Because there's a lot of cards in black that allow you to discard cards to earn some sort of payoff. So I figured, okay, what if I just take a bunch of giant beater creatures in Rakdos colors, which there are quite a few. You got a lot of dragons, zombies, etc., etc. And what if I wanted to throw those into the graveyard and then reanimate them using, you know, red and, well, actually not really reds, but black's creature to from graveyard to battlefield recursion. And use Anya's ability to be able to do this whenever I need to, but again, you know, not really stick too much in the Madness theme, mostly just use her as a discard outlet. So that was the original idea behind this deck. So obviously, I ended up running things like Living Death. Let's see, what else was I running? Rise of the Dark Realms in there. Obviously, when I built this deck, I was playing in a playgroup where we just focused mostly on combat. So the idea of being able to put all creature cards from all graveyards on the battlefield under my control sounded pretty sweet to try to be able to close out games. You know, various things like that. And, you know, just other ways, obviously throwing Anime Dead in there and whatnot. So just trying to be able to find ways to throw big threats into the graveyard and then be able to reanimate them and then have giant things on the battlefield. Problem was, is as I started really building the deck, I kind of went down a weird cycling path. So unfortunately, I started throwing some creatures with cycling into the deck because I thought, okay, what happens if Anya doesn't allow me to throw these cards in the graveyard, or she costs, let's say, 7, and I just need to throw something in the graveyard immediately. So I started looking into a bunch of cycling creatures. So I ended up having like Hollow One, which is a giant vintage card, oddly enough. But it's a 4/4 golem costing 5, and a Hollow One costs 2 generic less to cast for each card you've cycled or discarded this turn. Also has cycling for 2. So the idea here was if I'm able to discard a couple of cards, I can basically cast a free Hollow One, a 4/4 for free here. But the issue was is a lot of cycling creatures don't really have great abilities. And if you reanimate, let's say, a Granitic Titan, which is a 5/4 menace costing 4 red-red with cycling, you just have a 5/4 with menace that you got. There's really nothing special about that. Obviously, I did have some Madness creatures in there. I did have a Madness sub-theme in this particular deck, but I had it with a purpose. Instead of just throwing a bunch of random Madness cards into the deck, I looked through all the Madness cards in black and reds, respectively, and picked out the cards that I felt would actually have value for their Madness costs. So things like Big Game Hunter, which when you Madness pay 1 black, and when it enters the battlefield, destroy target creature with power 4 or greater, This is a nice removal spell. Kitchen Imp, it's a 2-2 flying haste with madness for a single black. Well, you know, that's a decent attacker early game. Muck Drub, you can Imp's Mischief something for 3 mana. Let's see, what else did I have here going through my Moxfield list right now? And, you know, Murderous Compulsion, destroy target tapped creature. Dark Withering to destroy target non-black creature for a single black. You know, things like that. So I tastefully chose the Madness cards that I believe would actually serve the deck well. But the idea was I would only tap Anya at my opponent's end step before my turn, so I could just throw whatever I had in my hand into the graveyard and then go to my turn. So if I had to cycle through a couple of Madness cards, I could, but that wasn't really the point. And again, I, looking back on this deck, it had the right idea, I think, but there were two issues. One, like I said before, the cards that I was reanimating were not scary. The only thing that I really had going in the bin that was scary was Emrakul. Obviously, the not banned one, but still a 13-13 with flying trample protection from instants is kind of scary. But, you know, when that's the only real threat you're actually getting out of this deck, because you're running enough madness creatures to try to do some things there, you kind of forget that this is a reanimator deck. And I really didn't do a very good job with the reanimator strategy. I was trying to do two or three different things with this deck, and it never quite worked. Second thing was that every time I tried to play this deck in a more casual table, people always seemed to assume that I was trying to play the combo, so they would always go after me. Even though I'm not playing the World Gorge or combo, I don't want to, because that wasn't the point of this deck. But again, enough people have played against Anya Falconwrath combo decks, fast combo decks, that no matter what you say, people still think you're lying. So unfortunately, this is a situation where I didn't exactly build it the best, and just the commander just being way, way, way beyond what I was trying to accomplish here, and unfortunately, that kind of ruined the whole concept. So, while I could easily go back and rebuild this deck, I really don't think I ever will, honestly, is that, yes, I could completely change things up, get rid of all those madness creatures, and just throw giant scary things into the bin. You know, actually do a real Rakdos reanimator strategy where I'm tossing giant dragons and demons into my graveyard. But, you know, as long as Anya is just going to be a kind of a kill-on-sight commander, it's really not that much fun. So, yeah, I think as far as, like, decks I would potentially think about revisiting, this is not going to be on the list there. So, sorry, Anya, but you're probably, well, actually, you already backed my bulk bin. You're probably going to stay there, unfortunately. Second deck that I wanted to talk about here was actually staying in that same portion of the color pie. This is actually a deck I've never talked about on the show here, probably for a reason, because, again, I could never make it work, and that is Olivia Voldaren. So this is the original, I want to say it was the original, was it Shadows printing? Okay, so from original Innistrad. And yeah, so she's a Vampire 3-3, costing 2 black and a red with flying, 1 on red activated ability to deal 1 damage to another target creature. That creature becomes a vampire in addition to its other types. Put a +1/+1 counter on Olivia Voldaren. And then you can pay 3 black, gain control of target vampire for as long as you control Olivia. So this is a very simple vampire commander where a lot of people would build this as either a vampire deck or as stealing your opponent's creatures. But again, I wasn't interested in doing either of those things. I was really focused on that +1/+1 counter ability that Olivia has, plus being a flyer that's, you know, relatively decent costed. Also for the fact that I got this card originally in a box of chaff that some guy gave to me at my first Magic Con, because I just started playing like earlier in the month. He just gave me a whole bunch of random cards, and Olivia was in that particular box, and I always kind of wanted to build around it. So yeah, that was my deck. So the idea here was I wanted to put as many +1/+1 counters on Olivia as I could by paying that particular cost and kind of just pinging various things and, you know, not really doing much else. And then eventually when Olivia would get, you know, to 10, 11 power, something like that, utilize something like a Gravitic Punch, sorcery for 3 and a red, saying target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to target player and has jump starts. You can cast this card from a graveyard by discarding a card in addition to paying its other costs. Or, let's see what else. Or Chandra's Ignition, so target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and each opponent. Or, you know, just your typical fling effects, your thuds, your flings, whatever. And, yeah, this deck, when it did the thing, it really only did that once or twice, it did it really well. Obviously, this deck could come out of nowhere when I needed it to. The biggest problem, though, was trying to generate 2 mana to get +1/+1 counters on Olivia. Unfortunately, my opponents would usually kill her before she could get to 6 or 7 power, and I really didn't have any ways in this particular deck to really be able to do anything else. Part of the issue there was when, at the time I built this, which was 2-3 years ago, and now, there really weren't any proliferate effects in black or red outside of Contagion Engine and maybe a couple other things. And now, with Phyrexia All Be One out, there are plenty of new options at, you know, maybe higher mana costs than they should be. But now there's more options for proliferate. So maybe I could rebuild this deck. A lot of the support creatures I threw into the deck were things like Agent of Stromgald. And if you've never heard of this card, you're probably not alone. It's a knight from Alliances, I believe. So back in 1996, it is a knight cost, 1/1 knight costing a single red mana. Has an activated ability. You can pay red to add black to your mana pool. Play this ability as an interrupt. So just kind of doing some weird mana fixing there. Cordial Vampire, whenever Cordial Vampire or another vampire or another creature dies, put a +1/+1 counter on each vampire you control. So, you know, if I was able to do a board wipe or something, let's say a Toxic Deluge, when Cordial Vampire dies, Olivia gets a whole bunch of counters because she is a vampire. Mana Forge Cinder, a 1/1 elemental shaman costing hybrid black red mana. The ability is 1 generic mana, add black or red to your mana pool, play this ability no more than 3 times each turn. So again, being able to turn like Sol Ring mana into colored mana to be able to utilize Olivia's abilities. You know, Syngir the Dark Baron is in there just to kind of give myself another giant threat. Basically, what I was trying to do was find a good mix of utility creatures as well as black and red creatures that would have +1/+1 counters to put I could put on them, and then I could proliferate. So if Olivia couldn't get to like 11 or 12 power for a Gravitic Punch, maybe something like Sengir would, which is a 4/4 flyer. Again, whenever another creature dies, put 2+1/+1 counters on Sengir. All of a sudden, that Toxic Deluge, now maybe I have a 20/20 or something, and just chuck this in someone's face to finish them off. I don't know. Let's see, Taurian Mauler was in there, 2/2 Shapeshifter with Changeling, and whenever an opponent, so again, the vampire would, it is technically a vampire, so Cordial Vampire would help the Mauler here, and whenever an opponent casts a spell, he may put a +1/+1 counter on Taurian Mauler. Obviously talked about this in a previous episode, but again, just a really good card that levels up with more people just casting spells over the course of a game. And I was also playing Yargle, the original Yargle in there, because hey, 9 power is really nice. So yeah, not the best deck, honestly. It was a really good idea, but I did not build it very well. And I put this deck away a long time ago and haven't played it in, honestly, a long time. But that being said, I've always really wanted to go back and revisit this again because I mentioned that there's more proliferate now. So maybe I can actually, you know, proliferate a little bit more, maybe not focus so much on Olivia herself, but instead utilize her ability to be able to ping creatures, get +1/+1 counters, you know, kill X1s, let's say. Or it says deals 1 damage to another target creature. Maybe I should start looking into some of the enraged dinosaurs from Ixalan who like being pinged for damage and then do things from there. So again, there's definitely a lot of ways to look into this. I would love to someday be able to kind of rebuild this deck in the same vein where I'm looking to put a lot of +1/+1 counters on various creatures in Rakdos colors. But I could definitely find a better way, a better strategy to be able to make sure that I'm not so focused on my commander. I mean, it's nice to have Olivia available to me to be able to deal that damage. And obviously the deck kind of runs through that, but I don't want her being the only creature in the deck that does exactly that. So again, something that's kind of in the bank there, maybe for later. Again, Rakdos is clearly one of my worst color pairings for trying to find decks that stick for me. So definitely going to have to think about ways to do that. But yeah, maybe someday I'll be able to get this deck to work. I guess I just need to think on a little bit more and try to figure something out. But yeah, that was my short-lived Rakdos Fling deck. Kind of a weird one there. Anyway, moving on here. So I'm going to finally leave Rakdos alone here. You know, I talk way too much about a lot of those things. Definitely not one of my best color pairings. So we are going to move on now to Selesnya, which is another, unfortunately, color pairing that just doesn't work for me for some reason. I don't know why. This deck actually kind of works, again, but it also has sort of the same issues as Anya Falconwrath did, and that is Sithis Harvest Hand. So Sithis is a 1/2 legendary enchantment creature nymph, costing a green and a white at Modern Horizons 2, and says whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you gain one life and draw a card. So yeah, you can already tell how bustedly good this deck can be. So obviously this is very CDH viable with enchantment lock, very powerful commander, very popular commander too. And when I first built this deck, I really was looking to be able to utilize some of the hidden enchantments from the Urza's block. And if you haven't heard of the hidden enchantments, it was a whole cycle of cards out of, what, Urza's Saga, I want to say, specifically. And basically, they're enchantments that come down super cheap, and when a particular criterion is met by one of your opponents, these cards turn into creatures. So I'm going to use Hidden Gorillas, and that is like Gorilla Fighter, not an actual gorilla like the ape. It is an enchantment for a single green and reads, whenever one of your opponents successfully casts an artifact spell, if Hidden Gorillas is an enchantment, Hidden Gorillas becomes a 5/3 creature with trample that counts as a soldier. So the idea was to be able to get a whole bunch of those sorts of things out, and when my opponents are setting things up, maybe by turn 2 or 3, all of a sudden have a 5/3 with trample on the board that could actually do something. Also ran Hidden Gibbons, which is a really funny card. It says, whenever one of your opponents successfully casts an instant or interrupt spell, obviously those don't exist anymore, if Hidden Gibbons is an enchantment, Hidden Gibbons becomes a 4/4 creature that counts as an ape and only costs a single green. So just various cards like that, as well as enchantment-based removal, your Lignifies, your Kenra's Transformation, but also running things like Luminarch Ascension, which was a huge thing in my playgroup at the time, Sigil of the Empty Throne to be able to gain a whole bunch of angels, and the idea was I was going to try to be able to create a giant token swarm utilizing a lot of enchantments and enchantment payoffs. So I was running Enchantress cards, your Verdurin Enchantress, your Mesa Enchantress, even through Femurif Enchantress in there, which is on the reserved list, and unfortunately I never actually drew in a single game with this deck, as well as Johnny's Chosen to be able to get cat tokens on the field, and Psychosis Crawler, just because I was able to draw enough cards that I was hoping to be able to ping people down 3, 4, 5 cards per turn. The issue with this particular deck, again, was one, Sithis was super popular, so again, kind of everyone was running it, and they also knew what I was trying to do. Second thing was, usually I ended up dealing with a lot of board wipes, and I had no way to give my creatures haste, unfortunately. So I would create a lot of tokens. My opponents, again, I played in a very board wipe heavy meta, would board wipe, and I was back to square one all the time. And unfortunately, this deck could only take so much punishment before it finally folded. So, yeah. I mean, I still have this deck around. I'm definitely willing to play it at some point again. I play it on a couple streams. I'm not going to tear it apart, but again, I just don't play it anymore because, again, it folded to board wipes and needed some work. But on the upside, though, it had a lot of really cool things going for it. I did enjoy the fact that I could use my commander's draw engine. I enjoyed the fact that I was able to draw a whole bunch of cards, which, you know, being in Selesnya, you don't necessarily always get to do, and just play a whole bunch of really weird enchantments And it was also a deck where I had a Carpet of Flowers in there, which is kind of nice to have. So, yeah, just an interesting deck that I don't think quite worked out as well as I hoped. But, again, is one of those that I'm just going to keep around just because. And I because I don't have the heart, one, to take it apart. Or, two, you know, it's kind of nice to just have sitting in the bank there should I ever feel like I want to play it. The next one I want to talk about is another very popular commander that I could just never quite make work. And that was Alayla, Artful Provocateur. Alayla is a 2/3 fairy warlock from the Throne of Eldraine Brawl decks, costing 1, a white, a blue, and a black. Has flying, death touch, and lifelink. Other creatures you control with flying get +1/+0. Whenever you cast an artifact or enchantment spell, you create a 1/1 blue fairy creature token with flying. So you want to play a whole bunch of artifacts, you want to play enchantments, you want to do all sorts of cool stuff like that with Alayla, who is also a really nice blocker to have. Problem with this particular deck was when I was playing my old playgroup, I could never quite find a mix that worked for me. Obviously, I played a lot of ramp in this particular deck. I was able to get some fairies out there, but again, it was a very board wipe heavy meta. Maybe this is a kind of a story of, you know, trying to run token decks into very, very heavy board wipe metas. Probably wasn't the best idea. And also, I just kind of got, you know, tired of the deck. They just never quite worked out the way I wanted to. Obviously, according to the most recent list I have here on Moxfield, I was running 36 artifacts and enchantments. So, you know, getting a lot of value out of those. I'm running your typical ramp spells, your Mirage Mirror, Bind of Thassa to be able to draw a bunch of cards, Sensei's Top, Tome of Legends, etc., etc. Let's see, in the enchantments, running, you know, some removal, your Arrest, your Darksteel Mutation, Pariah was in there to be able to force all damage be dealt to me and be dealt to enchant creature instead. Seal of Cleansing, be able to destroy target artifact or enchantment. You know, just and again, having some very nice ways to buff my creatures. So your Luminarch Ascension and create a bunch of angel tokens, Intangible Virtue to make my fairy tokens bigger. Variable Winds to give my creatures with flying +1/+1 efficient construction to help me make Thopters. So not a bad deck, but again, it just, I think with this deck, unfortunately, my was more the lands were a problem, is that I kept getting stuck on two colors of lands, and I could never quite fight through that particular issue. There's a big reason why I don't really like playing 3+ color decks, and this is really one of them. So the most recent version, I threw in like a City of Brass, a Mana Confluence, Prismatic Vista, Spire of Industry, you know, ways to be able to get lands out of my deck so I can actually color fix. But again, the big problem with this deck was I just seemed to get messed up on mana, and I can never quite get all three mana there. So unfortunately, by the time I get my third color mana, I'm already way behind. And yeah, this deck unfortunately never quite worked out the way I hoped. So again, I haven't taken this one apart either, but it's one of those situations where it might just be my bad luck. Obviously, I know a lot of folks would say, oh, you should play a lot of mana-fixing lands. Yeah. But, you know, I don't really care for that. I'm just going to kind of play whatever I want to play. And if it doesn't work, it just doesn't work. And I just take it apart. So I'm not going to worry too much about that. But that there's a reason why I don't really reach for this deck anymore. Because I'm really honestly sick of trying to find the right color mana when I'm already basically out of the game and I finally draw the color mana I need, and yeah, I'm screwed. So that was not necessarily the best version of that. And I think the last one that I'm going to go into here is I'm going to bump it up to the Nitro Casual realm. This is going to Orzhov, which oddly enough, I seem to play a lot of. And this was supposed to be my 4-card combo deck to meet with the quote-unquote higher-powered pods. And I always kind of wanted to build around a Lend of the Dusk Rose. You probably heard me talk about her on multiple occasions here on the podcast. But anyway, I really loved her ability to be able to get larger whenever a creature died. I also wanted to be able to kind of get a nice Aristocrats deck because I could never really get that to work normally. So I wanted to take both of those things and stick them together into a single deck. So I looked up Lenda on EDH Rec, I found some combos, threw them all into this particular deck, and tried to call it a day. problem was, is I really didn't play the deck all that well. You know, it just felt like the deck was full of combo pieces, and I never really found what I needed when I needed it. Sure, the combo worked a couple of times. Most of the time, I would either end up with a lot of dead cards in my hand, or just, you know, not really be able to find the cards I needed, and then, you know, the deck just kind of folds to a more aggressive deck. So, yeah, and the other issue was that Alenda didn't exactly lend herself to the deck strategy. If I could get infinite death triggers but had no Aristocrats pieces, no Zulaport Cutthroat, no Blood Artist effects to be able to ping people, I can make Alenda infinitely large but then have absolutely nothing to do with her. And unless I had a Rogue's Passage sitting in play, I have an infinitely large lifelinker who maybe I can kill, maybe not. You know, so I would always end up in the situation where my commander really wasn't necessarily helping my strategy, and I had a small package of cards in there specifically for her, where it's like, oh, well, now I need to find three or four more cards plus this other thing. And again, it just never quite worked. And I didn't really enjoy playing it all that much. So the good news on this one is when Dominaria United, Elisil Kor, Sadistic Pilgrim got released. So I had a 2-2 Death Toucher. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain one life. And whenever another creature you control dies, each opponent loses one life. So a very low-costed Aristocrats piece who could work with this particular deck a little bit better. Obviously, I have sacrifice effects in this deck and the ability to be able to recur things and then sacrifice them and then ping the table down with my commander. Ended up just winning out in this particular situation. But, never fear, Alenda was still definitely on my mind, and I ended up building a very different deck for her. I took some of the Aristocrat stuff, but also an entirely different sub-package, and now that's one of my favorite decks to play at more casual tables. So, while Alenda didn't necessarily work so well in this particular shell, she's ended up actually going off as a commander in one more casual staple of decks. So I think this worked out for everyone in a way. I honestly haven't played this deck in a while. I probably should start taking this to conventions again because it's not a bad deck. It's got a lot of the good stuff. It's got a lot of fun little combos in there, at least when I actually pull those off correctly. And, you know, can do some cool things. So anyway, those are the five decks of my choice for today that, you know, I built at one point or another, and they just didn't really work out the way that they were intended to. Some of them are never going to really see the light of day again. Some of them are still there. Some of them I want to kind of work on, but I never got around to it. So, yeah, as much as I talk about decks that I enjoy building and then immediately love, for every Kothafed deck, there is an Anya Falconrath deck. For every deck I play a whole ton, like my Selenia deck, there is always there's always the Sithis or the Alaylas that just never really make it out of the bin when I reach for a deck. So, yeah, those are some of the decks that I just never play anymore or have already scrapped and why they fell apart. But yeah, now I want to hear from you. So you can either at me on Twitter, or if Spotify does have the poll on there, I'm honestly not sure how that works. Let me know what your decks were that you really were excited for but just never quite could make work. Yeah, just let me know, and yeah, we can start a conversation on all that. I would love to hear about some of the challenges you've been dealing with in deck building, and because I know I can relate, honestly. We've all been going through cycles like that where we run into situations where we have the best of intentions and the decks just don't work as we wanted them to, and we get really disappointed. So yeah, just let me know about that, and yeah, see you around. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Hopefully I'll be able to get some really good content coming out here soon, and yeah, have a good one. All right, here's the end of the episode. So I would like to give another huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. Huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Bence, Nick S., Frugal Brutal, and Coach J-Row for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.